Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Tax cuts for big corporations encourage companies to grow bigger and bigger, move jobs and production overseas for cheaper labor, and undercut local small businesses.
Kicking off a rural tour across America, President Joe Biden.
Meat producing companies and the retail grocery chains consolidate, leaving farmers and ranchers with few choices about where to sell their products, reducing their bargaining power. Corporations that sell seed, fertilizer, and even farm equipment use their outsized market power to change farmers and charge them and ranchers unfair prices. You know, in part because of these conditions, over the past four decades, we lost over 400,000 farms in America. 400,000. Over 141 million acres of farmland.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You know, a lot of people think, you know, oh my gosh, the Farm Bill expired September 30th and that the programs aren't going to work anymore. And that's really not the case because of the way they're written.
Chandler Gould, CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers.
Now, that said, you can go pretty much from September 30th to December 31st with an expired farm bill, and everybody, including wheat and dairy, can continue along with certainty and knowing what's going on. But come January 1, you're going to start to see programs that aren't authorized or funded because the farm bill hasn't been passed. That's when you're going to start seeing some major problems in rollout and delivery of whatever program was put in the 18 farm bills. So we are definitely looking at an extension. Both the Senate and House Agriculture Committees know they have to extend the farm bill. I think there's a little bit of a debate. The Senate is asking for at least a full year extension, and the House is saying they need an extension, but they haven't really put a definite time on how long they want that extension to be to give the new speaker an opportunity to try to push a farm bill through, saying, as you may remember, Speaker Johnson said he wants to get a farm bill done by December, but I'm afraid funding the government is going to take up all of his legislative days between now and the end of December.
And though there are plenty of challenges.
Well, we had a huge win yesterday, not only for the U.S. wheat grower, but really for all commodities in agriculture. NOG has been the lead plaintiff against the state of California in regards to their Prop 65, which was going to require any product that had glyphosate applied to it to put a very misleading and false warning label on the food products or other end uses, wherever they may go. And NOG, along with a coalition, sued the state of California over the fact that we know glyphosate is safe. There has been numerous EPA, HHS, Institute of Health, the EU, which we know is so strict on so many of the crop protection chemicals, have all tested and said glyphosate is safe. And Prop 65 was going to force a misleading and false label on there. A permanent injunction was granted by the Ninth Circuit yesterday saying that California cannot require that warning label to be put on there because there was no scientific data that backed their claims. And so we have been fighting this for 6 years. This is an excellent win for us. It's an excellent precedent for agriculture. And we're just thrilled that the court actually made a science-based decision and not just on emotion.
So what else is on the radar for wheat growers?
We actually just need to see, you know, the EPA to make sure that through FIFRA, you know, if EPA says a product is safe and has gone through the registration process, then there is state preemption, and we cannot go around and have 50 states come back and add additional labeling or saying that, you know, they want X, Y, and Z to be done to a commodity or for a commodity before it can enter their state. And California is by far the worst. And it's not just crop protection. I mean, look what they did to eggs and what they're doing to pork. Between the Interstate Commerce Clause and preemption of the federal government, California seems to think they're their own country out there, and they want to dictate to the rest of the country how we are going to produce food to feed everybody. And this is just a huge win for us, showing that our EPA and our regulatory agencies have said this product is safe, and therefore it is safe in all 50 states and to move forward. And we're hoping this will set a precedent, not only for commodities, but also on the livestock side, as things continue to, I would say, degrade in California. But this is still a huge win for us here at NOG and U.S. Wheat Growers. And we look forward to continuing with our coalition on this and other issues.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'm Brent Kemp. I am Ag Gateway's President, Chief Executive Officer.
Kemp joins Cindy Zimmerman in this special report.
Been on staff with the organization since 2014.
We have your annual meeting coming up here right around the corner. So tell us a little bit about what you're going to have in store for the Ag Gateway annual conference coming up in this month.
Ag Gateway's annual meeting is a combination celebration of the work that's been done and the volunteers who have done it over the course of the last year, as well as an education and working session. So we'll have educational breakouts covering topics like artificial intelligence, biodiversity and preservation of nature and how that relates to agriculture and our industry at large. We'll have some cybersecurity sessions. We'll also have breakouts educating participants on how to be better facilitators and meeting leaders. Things that a participant can take back to their organization and immediately add value. We'll, of course, talk about the work that's been done over the year, the various digital resources that have been developed and published, moving our organization forward and highlighting some of the companies who have implemented those resources. We'll also report out on the elections for new leaders within the organization, whether that's the organizational board or the regional steering committees, as well as just a quick touch on the organization's finances. It's really intended, like I said at the outset, to be a celebration of the work that's been done. But we do have some business that we have to transact as well.
Well, you are about, Ag Gateway is about 3 years, or really only about 2 years into your reorganization. How has the reorganization of Ag Gateway gone in the last couple of years?
I think it's been very effective, to tell you the truth. As you point out, and rightly so, prior to 2020, Ag Gateway was really three different organizations. One here in North America, United States, Canada, one that had some maturity in Europe, and one that was starting up in Latin America, primarily Brazil, with a little bit in Argentina. And as the board looked at the organization and the opportunities to build some efficiencies, they suggested and directed us to go ahead and consolidate into a single Ag Gateway organization. So now we are truly global. We have staff in Europe, in Latin America, as well as in North America, who are specifically charged with those regions, as well as staff who really support the global organization. The work that's being done is being done in that global context. So we have working groups that are being led by Europe. We have one that will be spinning up here in the beginning part of 2024. That'll be led by our Latin American group, but Ag Gateway members can participate wherever and whenever they have interest. So even though something's led in Europe or led in Latin America, anybody can participate. Anybody can be a part of that work, take the resources that are used, and apply it to their own local context.
Brent Kemp, President and CEO of Ag Gateway, for the upcoming Ag Gateway Annual Conference in Nashville. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The 2023 National FFA Convention has wrapped up in Indianapolis.
I'm John Ching, here with the finalists in Agricultural Services Entrepreneurship Placement, Maggie McDonald. Can you tell me a little bit about your project?
So I'm the owner and operator of M Squared Genetics and Testing, where I blood-based pregnancy test ruminant animals to determine their pregnancy. I have about 250 customers from 10 different states. This is what I do as my SAE, but not only do I do this for an FFA project, but I also do this to serve a purpose to the farmers and ranchers in the 10 states and to the 250 customers that I have.
Well, how did your FFA journey start?
Well, I'll be real honest. When I was little, I was about 8 years old, I can say that I showed a goat for the first time at my county fair, and it was something I fell in love with. My grandpa ran a bunch of cattle. My other grandpa was a soybean farmer, but the show industry wasn't something I grew up in, but that's where the base of my blue jacket started. I was in 4-H, and then in the seventh grade, I was able to join my middle school FFA chapter, so I did that, and it's something I fell in love with. I was actually an FFA officer for 5 years at my high school and my middle school. Now I'm a freshman in college, and FFA is still something that I'm obviously a part of because I'm here, but I'm on the livestock judging team, so my agriculture background and my show background has turned into what I do in college every day. I travel the country showing and judging livestock, and my blue jacket's been a part of that. And then, like I said, my business is also at my, it came with me to college, and so I'm able to incorporate that into my everyday life also. And so my blue jacket means so much, and how I started was just a small bit of my story.
What would you say to FFA members who may be thinking of starting a new SAE project and something they might be unfamiliar with or something new that they're trying out?
A piece of advice I was given when I was about 12 was always take the shot. Never turn down an opportunity that you think might can change your life for the better. And that's kind of what I had to do. It was just my SAE and my business and M Squared started as an idea. And I took the idea and said, you know, I can do this because if anybody's capable of it, you are, I promise. And I was told actually by one of my teachers one day that she didn't feel like I was qualified to do this. And that, I will say, that was my biggest motivation. Motivation would be the word you use, because being told you can't and then doing something is such an awesome feeling and just a great way to, I guess that's a good way to put it, it's a good feeling.
What was the craziest experience that you had while partaking in your project?
I have incredible experiences, and then I've had to deal with not incredible experiences also. Probably the craziest experience I've ever had to deal with. I had a customer that filed for bankruptcy, and he had a QuickBooks account, and so I just billed him every month, and I went and checked all my bills and realized he hadn't paid his bill in a month. And so the following month, I reached out to him, gave him a call, and said, "Hey, sir, your bill's due. I'm not going to run any more blood until you pay your bill." And found out he filed for bankruptcy, and so I not only did I lose a lot of money, that was a lesson I learned and something I was able to turn into a good thing and learn, hey, this is what you do in this situation, and this is what you don't let happen again. And so that was, I guess you could say that was crazy. I mean, not many juniors in high school have to deal with a customer that's filed for bankruptcy. So that was probably one of the craziest experiences I've had.
That was National Proficiency Winner in Agricultural Services, Entrepreneurship, and Placement, Maggie McDonald. For National FFA, I'm John Chang.
Thanks, John. Again, the 2023 National FFA Convention in Indianapolis. This is Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The Ag Committee, ironically, has very little jurisdictional authority over ag labor.
Rick Crawford is a representative from Arkansas and a member of the House Ag Committee.
What we do have is the subject matter expertise and the relationship with the farm community. And so as a member that represents a very rural district, you can imagine I get a lot of phone calls from farmers that are having problems with an H-2A program that is really not has not maintained pace with the demands of the current farm economy. So we've got some labor shed issues. We can't rely on our domestic workforce because, quite frankly, it's hard to get the domestic workers to come and do the kind of work associated with ag production. And so for a long time, we have relied on essentially outsourcing farm labor. That has historically been from countries and from places like Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, and others in the region. But we're now starting to see countries like South Africa that are displacing to a large degree those other migrant workers. And the program is becoming more costly. There's a variety of reasons we see that are contributing to that. And so Chairman Thompson decided we needed to really formalize an effort to address the ag labor crisis in rural America. And so we stood up the Ag Labor Task Force, which I chair along with my counterpart on the Dem side, Don Davis from North Carolina. So we have been on a mission, and we've actually had about a 6-month charter here where we could bring in the relevant stakeholders, have the information that we need, go out and meet producers, and collect as much information as we could. And Monday of this week, just almost just yesterday, we released the interim report that really kind of puts some meat on the bone what we're trying to do. And I have really qualified this effort by saying that this has been a very narrow focus. And that is to say, we are specifically focused on the labor issue. We are not making this about immigration. And this is where we've had problems in the past, where either immigration leverages ag labor or ag labor leverages immigration, and neither one of those issues is addressed effectively. Our goal was to focus only on the labor side as it applies to ag, and our members got that message, and we stayed very, very much within those parameters. And I think we've delivered a great product out of the Ag Committee, and that is this interim report. And we'll finish this up probably by the end of the year with a final report with some legislative recommendations. Now, what we're going to do after this interim report circulates, we're going to allow for members of Congress to come in and sort of make their recommendations as well. We're going to have two or three member day hearings to collect their thoughts as well, before we issue a final report with legislative recommendations to the committees of authority. As I mentioned, the committees of authority, ag is not in the equation. We have to go to judiciary, foreign affairs, education and workforce, and in some cases, ways and means. But ag has very little jurisdictional authority. But what we do have, as I mentioned before, is the experience to provide what we think are really good recommendations to the committees of authority. And so we're probably going to take a piecemeal approach to this and address those issues in the relevant committees. But we do feel like we're going to make some good, strong recommendations that's based in reality.
They'll need help from the Senate as well.
And we think we can get some bicameral uptake as well. So I think the approach has been appropriate. I think we're going to see a really good opportunity for the first time to actually affect some positive change.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
My name is Owen Wagner. I'm a senior analyst, grains and oil seeds, within the Food and Agriculture Research Team. I'm based in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Wagner joins Chuck Zimmerman in this special report.
Tell us about the kinds of reports that you put together and how important they are to your members or people who, you know, might be willing to need that information, and they can probably find a way to get it from you.
Sure. So we really try within Rabobank Research to focus on thematic questions. You know, we know that there's really good coverage on day-to-day, what's the price going to look like next week or next month, but perhaps less coverage on, you know, these big sort of multi-year issues that are going to impact the sector for years or decades to come. So I've been with Rabobank about a year now. The first project that I worked on was for sustainable aviation fuel, so that would fit very nicely in that type of model of these broad sectoral changes that are going to impact agriculture for better or for worse.
China's in a, you know, seeming in a really economic, facing a lot of economic pressure at the moment. What's going to be the impact that might translate into in terms of particularly maybe soybean exports?
Yeah, I think China has really developed a pretty defensive posture on a number of fronts. But sticking to ag specifically, we know the macro economy in China, like you've alluded to, has deteriorated so much, even if they're, you know, now beginning to bury that data or not update it as frequently, which is certainly discouraging. Population growth in China has not only plateaued, but it's beginning to fall. So this is, you know, does, I think, force American ag interests to revisit that partnership. And to their credit, they've done it. So groups like USEC have gone out and they've, you know, made a very concerted effort to diversify their marketing portfolio, you know, looking at, you know, South Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, other places of growth longer term. But, you know, near term, I mean, China, there's no replacing China, excuse me, Chuck, no replacing China. They account for one soybean and four that's exported from this, one row and four of soybeans grown in this country. And unfortunately, the pace of U.S. export sales, particularly for this new crop, has been something like the third or fourth lowest in the past decade. And yet it's worth bearing in mind that, you know, two and a half of those years in the last decade were occupied by the trade association. So those were sort of artificially low to begin with. In theory, we're on the other side of that, yet trade has not really recovered satisfactorily. So that's a concern. It's not wholly unpredictable because China was, they've made some very explicit pronouncements here in the last several months about reducing reliance on imported grains to feed hogs. They've been successful, by all measures in achieving that. So you go back 4 or 5 years, and the share of soybean meal in the hog ration was like 15%. Today we think it's about 13%, and the goal is to get it to 11.5% in the next 3 years or so. The big question, though, is that China does have a history of bluster and talking tough when the cards are in their favor. They did that during the trade war. They leaned heavily on Brazilian beans for 2.5 years until they simply exhausted that supply, and then they had to come back. They renegotiated. It took a softer stance of the United States and came back to the negotiating table. I think it remains to be seen whether we'll see a repeat of that, because China was emboldened a little bit by 3 years of record wheat crops out of Australia. And we know now, with weather pattern shifting back into an El Nino, that Australia is going to be hard-pressed to duplicate that. How long can China maintain this stance? How much stock do they have in reserve in order for them to perpetuate these policies before they have to come back and maybe resume some of those more normal level of purchases?
I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I'm here with National FFA President Andrew Seibel. So, Andrew, as your year of service is coming to an end, what would you say were some of the things that you gained or learned from your experience?
I think the biggest thing I learned was the value of being present in the moment every single day, wherever we are in life. This year was one that was extremely fast-paced. My team and I each spent over 300 days on the road and traveled over 100,000 miles, each hitting over 35 states. And that's an incredible stat line, but what really mattered was when we were in the moment with FFA members. And it was easy to get distracted in the pace of things and not realize how special every single moment was. But I think the biggest thing I learned, that whether I am driving down the road, going to a chapter visit, going to a state convention with 10,000 people or a state convention with 40 people at it, that the most important thing is being present in the moment and being there right where our feet are, loving the people around us and understanding just how valuable those connections are.
So with FFA being the largest student-run organization in the U.S., what advice would you have for members that they could use maybe in their FFA careers or in maybe future careers in the workforce?
I would just like them to remember that this jacket can take you wherever you want it to, and this experience and this organization can be whatever we want to make it. Not every single person has to be a state officer or a national officer to be successful with an FFA. We can be very successful without that, and this organization has opportunities for every single student, whether they come from an agricultural background, a more urban background, whether they're interested in going into the agricultural field, or maybe they don't necessarily want to go into direct production agriculture. Our organization is large. It is vast and as full of opportunities, and every single student, if they really get in there and look at it and love the people around them, I think they can find an opportunity that will carry them far into the future.
Oftentimes people associate FFA with just being about cows, plows, and sows. What would you say that FFA has to offer that maybe not be directly related to agriculture or catered towards students who may not be from a background of agriculture?
Absolutely. I mean, our organization has most applicable leadership skills of anything that I've ever interacted with in my personal life or in my professional life. I think whoever the person is, if they enter into our organization, is going to gain a lot of skills that are going to set them apart from their peers, whether it be public speaking, being able to present, anything like that, just talking to other people and making connections. But also through our supervised agricultural experiences, there are many different ways that students can take them. Agriculture is a vast industry, and I've seen some amazing projects of students who do not come from an agricultural background. For example, in downtown Miami, I saw students running a vet clinic that was open 365 days a year, where they took in rescue dogs, spayed, neutered them, gave them all of their shots, and then adopted them out to the local public. And it was an incredible project. And then I've also seen some of the smartest students I've ever met who are actually developing new hybrid crops and doing incredible research and that want to really make a difference in the world, even if it's not directly on the farm level. We started with 33 farm boys, and that's still our roots. We're still rooted in agriculture, but agriculture, on theme with our convention, is evolving and it is changing. And it's an industry that needs every single one of us, and our organization has 945,000 people who are going to be able to pour into it.
With your year of service as a national officer coming to a close soon, what are your plans after?
I want to go back and be a normal college student for a little bit, as silly as that sounds. This year has been incredible. It's been more full than I ever could have imagined, but I'm ready to take these experiences, reflect on them, and just slow down for a little bit and figure out what's really the things that I want out of this life beyond this organization.
That was National FFA President Andrew Seibel. Reporting for National FFA, I'm John Chang.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Grant supporting local and regional food system expansion.
The Local Agriculture Market Program, LAMP, is a bundle of different programs that was established in the 2018 Farm Bill.
And Agriculture Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, Jenny Moffitt, says more than $32 million in grants are going to 98 projects covered by LAMP through its sub-programs. Farmers Market Promotion Program, Local Food Promotion Program, and Regional Food Systems Partnerships.
And each of these programs has a specific focus, and all of them are supporting local and regional food systems.
Farmer Market and Local Food Promotion Program grants focus on projects with specific marketing and trading opportunities, while Regional Food System Partnerships create relationships between producers and institutions such as schools and hospitals. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.